Well, hello and welcome to the 152nd episode of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Al Coates, and him,
Scott Casson. Ready! Ready!
Excellent. Have you recovered, yay. Scott? Have you recovered?
Oh, I don't think I have. I'll be perfectly frank. I'm absolutely shattered this week. I mean, we have to say it's because the conference was on Friday, wasn't it? We're now Wednesday.
Yes. Yes, we are.
I am absolutely knack. Nicky knacky nude.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it? Because I think there's so much thought and worry and anxiety and stress going to it. But it went without any glitches other than my internet died the night before.
Yeah, it was a great day. It was a really good day. And the thing is, I know, yes, I think I try not to stress, because last couple of years I've stressed about it, stressed about sales, stressed about this, stressed about that.
Oh.
And decided this year I wasn't going to stress because actually life's too short. To stress about things.
I concur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do not be afraid.
So I decided not to. I decided not to. And then 10 o'clock the night before, I was like, oh my days, why are we doing this again? But we did talk about it, didn't we? And we said, well, I kind of mentioned to you, actually, because we chair it and we present it and then we introduce and we chat to the speakers, etc., it's easier for us not to have our own sections because it adds a lot of pressure onto us having our own sections. And yes, we could do it. I mean, it'd be easy enough to do, but it just adds so much pressure because you've got your own section to think about as well. And
yeah, people hear us all the time. You know, if you want to hear us, listen to the podcast. So yes, that's fine. Yeah. I thought it was a great day. I thought it was a world-class, you know, you had Sarah Jahal, who's the head of the, you know, the lead of the RAAs. We had, you know, so she's national lead. You had Professor Beth, who was, as always, just, I could listen to
her
all day. Then you had the good Mrs. Coates, who I've not been allowed to listen to and will not listen to. but the word on the street is she was good. And then we had Dawn, who was fantastic. Then we had Angela Fraser Wicks, who was just absolutely on fire. And that is the episode where we've asked her, maybe after Christmas we'll put that out so people can listen to it. We didn't get a chance to.
Yeah. Well, what was interesting, because obviously Sarah and Beth did their kind of presentation of the kind of state of the nation, if you like, in their sections. Dawn wanted to do more of a conversational piece. And for some reason, Mrs. Coates thought that's what it was going to be as well, because she said her husband had said that it was going to be a more... And so she was expecting to be asked questions. And of course, I wasn't aware of that. So she was quite panic-stricken, poor love. She'd have paid a double.
Well, apparently her husband's unreliable waif. So we finally agree on something.
Well. But she was great. She was absolutely great.
Yeah.
Her story, I mean, like, I obviously, we're all friends, aren't we, the four of us? So we chat and talked about our experience and stuff. But actually, she went into a lot more depth about it. So she was telling, you know, she was sharing stuff that I didn't know as well. And it was really interesting to listen to that kind of the background and, you know, how it all works and how it did work, how it came to be. And I think knowing you and Paula anyway, well, knowing Paula, well, when I say this, you'll understand what I mean. But knowing Paula, I'm not surprised that she really drove that kind of relationship. I mean, you're less kind of people-y, but you went along for the ride as well, obviously. But I would imagine that Paula definitely drove it. And, you know,
I mean, I describe her flippantly as the beating heart of the family, and that's the crux of it. So anyway, but people, if people didn't get a chance to book in or it was work, they couldn't do it, and there was all kinds of complicated reasons why people couldn't, we have made the recordings available afterwards. So if they go on to the noborderstraining.org website, I think I got that
Congratulations.
Right.
Congratulations.
Oh, for a second there, I literally couldn't feel my legs.
I mean, I could tell you off for not giving the / training events, but
find the website and you can buy is it a modest charge? People can listen afterwards, can't they?
It's the same price, but it includes the fees for the transaction as well, because obviously, you know, we're cheap, so we don't pay for a payment platform, so we get charged every time.
So we're working on that.
If you want to If you want to contact us, I will certainly send you our bank details, and you can put as much money as you want in there. And we can do it that way if you prefer. Just yeah. Well, we're not really a charity, so we can't beg or ask for donations. Really, officially, but it's all there. Look at the training and events page on the website, or just send us an email, anfpodcast@gmail.com, and we can sort out bank details, transfers, etc. If you want to do it without the charges. But I would say this, I've listened to it back again. Have you not?
No. Oh. I'm a shark. I move on. I mean, I edit, but I never listen back to the podcast. Well, you know that sometimes I do listen back to the podcast.
If it's a funny story. One.
if I was particularly good, then I tend to listen to myself. But
I have to say that if you really want to hear some great stories, Dawn, Paula, and Angela, well worth paying the money for.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It gives you some really deep insights into it, and hopefully some confidence to, to challenge, to try, to, participate, to do whatever it is that you need to do. That would be my thing. So
yeah. And I just today I got confirmation that a group of social workers from Adoption Counts are going to come on, and which is a RAA, and I would say that they're probably really innovative in relation to their contact. I'm sure there's people get in touch and say, I've sent a letterbox and it got stuck forever. I'm sure. Yeah, that was me being dismissive. Sorry. I saw a presentation for them to the Adoption Special Guardian Leadership Board, and I thought that is fantastic and really, really innovative. So I asked them if they'd come and share some of their stuff, and they will. So that's really good. Tonight, just if people are reading the show notes, they're going, what about this guy we're getting on? So we are tonight going to speak about to Robin Findlay from the National Union of Professional Foster Carers. We did an interview with him. That'll be at the end of the podcast, and that speaks for itself, really. But there's a few other things we wanted to get off our chest before we crack on, because we get the dirty water off our chest. So Scott, you had a post-conference flurry of mental overstimulation. You did what did you do, Scott?
Well, so it was Friday afternoon, Friday evening, sorry. Post-conference, I always have a lovely glass of wine to myself just to kind of bring myself down.
And a power nap.
Had a power nap as well. Yeah. Very brief one, but I didn't want. But I decided to put on the Facebook and the Twitter that, because we've been talking about it for ages, pre-COVID, we've been talking about visiting places. But Alan and I had spoken, and January, we're in London together. And Al suggested that we might get a room in a pub somewhere, invite some people along, and kind of do a bit of a recording, bit of a laugh, bit of japes, bit of bands. Maybe have a guest in, just do something like that. And he said, I found a place somewhere and I could do it, and da-da-da-da-da. And I was like, oh, cool. So anyway, I'm sipping my glass of wine and all of a sudden I have this amazing idea, because I'm in Edinburgh in February to go and visit family and see a show. I said to Al, we could do it in Edinburgh as well. So with that, I messaged my friend in Edinburgh who I used to work with and said, because obviously, my friend at Adoption UK Scotland, so the director of Adoption UK Scotland, name drop, and said, thinking about this, do you think you could help? She's like, listen, I'm away from my birthday, definitely. Okay. So then I decided to post on social media saying, the class, we're going to go to London and Edinburgh and we're going to do this. Where else would anybody like us to come?
So much for a nice evening in after the conference, and my notifications had a total
meltdown.
So
essentially, like I say, we were going to do this pre-COVID, but we were going to do a couple of nights pre-COVID. But it's turned into this big thing that people seem to want. And that's not, I keep on pinching myself going, people want us to go to these places? Like, are they, they're clearly demented like we are. So that's a good thing. But
stupid boy.
we collated the list. Well, I collated the list on Monday. I was on fire all weekend, to be fair, but I was on fire on Monday to the point where Tris is going to be charging the podcast for my time because I didn't do much work for FASD Ireland. Yeah, exactly. Whatever. It's easy. We go back and forward. Anyway, so I've collated all the places. I've put a very brief survey together. Al will post that in the show notes as well. And essentially, it's just asking a couple of questions. Yes, you will. It's asking a couple of questions, mainly where. So we've obviously got all these towns and cities that people have suggested. I've put them in there. Some people have suggested some others on the bottom of that. It's asking about how much would you be willing to pay. Now, it's not about us making money, and we need to be very clear about this. We don't want to make anything out of it. We're willing to do this, but we do need to cover our costs to get there and to stay over in places that we can't get home from. It's that simple. So when Emma Mortimer... Emma Mortimer put free, because it should be, I was actually ready to get on a plane and go and slap her.
I thought what we should do to teach her a lesson is we should stay at her house.
Yes, exactly.
If you want free, then you get
The drinks. She can buy the drinks. I'm joking aside, because I did put that on there as an option, free, because it should be, and to see how many people would be really cheeky.
Well, we'll get sponsors. We'll get our sponsors if we can twist some arms.
I've spoken to some RAs. They're looking into it for us. I've spoken to other agents into it for us as well. So, like I say, we don't want to make money out of it, but we do need to cover our costs, because obviously it will cost us to get there and cost us to stay over. So what time would be preferable? We would prefer the evenings because we have to work, but we understand that some people might not be able to get there. But essentially, we'll record what we can of it. We might not record all of it, but we'll record what we can of it and put them out as mini podcasts or something like that.
Yeah.
But we want to have a laugh. We want to engage with people. We want to have banter. We want heckling. We want to be asked questions. We want to have a guest.
Yeah.
A little bit like a mini tour, a smaller version of mini tour. I mean, we're not going to sell out any arenas anywhere, let's face it.
No.
But so the survey asked a number of questions.
We might sell out the Greg's Cafe section. In the local exactly. Greg's. Mm-hmm. What I really would like it to be is there's lots of things that we don't talk about on the podcast. There's stories that we don't share.
A lot of things we can't say out loud.
Yeah, due to professional registrations and the libel laws of the land. So it'd be a place that we can have those conversions. So that looks
who's your worst guest?
Scott. He hasn't left.
Yeah, I'm still here. Keep on turning up. Yeah.
So that's that. And there's not much going on in the news, but there's a couple of things. I saw a thread, really interesting thread. I don't know if we've got time, because I'm conscious we got the which is actually a fascinating interview with Robin Findlay. So please listen to that. It is, and I think it's really interesting about the formation, the sort of the rationale behind the National Union of Professional Foster Carers. Maybe afterwards we can sort of get some feedback on that, because I think it's needed. Anyway, we'll keep our powder dry on that one. The other thing I noticed was, did you see there was a really interesting thread from an adopted person, Vic Storer, on Twitter in relation to Adoption UK and the work they've sort of starting to do around supporting adopted adults? I don't know whether I've got some thoughts on that. I don't know whether you've got thoughts that you want to share, because I know you, but you still maintain really close links, and we're hopefully getting the new CEO on soon.
We were supposed to meet with her yesterday, I think, wasn't it? Not for podcasty things, just to introduce herself and say hi. She does listen to the podcast, so she tells
us. Negotiate her terms for the interview.
Sign her NDA, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I did see it, yes. And it's interesting because I have some thoughts on it as well, but I'll go second for a change.
All right. Okay. Well, my thoughts were, I think it's just a really interesting, I think it's needed, but I think that maybe Adoption UK just could never be the people who provide it, that support for adopted adults. I just wonder whether and I was sort of reflecting on the what we do, and we invite adopted adults on to the podcast and they share. But it is very much they're coming into our space, and we're inviting them to share. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered whether that was maybe it's just too big a leap for a lot of the adoption community to go, actually, we want our own space by our own people, whatever that means, people who, and I just wondered whether it was just, I understand the desire in that. And I think I think that it's a laudable intention, but I just wonder whether it's maybe just something that's never going to and a takeoff, really.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting in a lot of ways. So there's a few things, really, from my perspective. So the first thing is, I've got a new CEO who's only been in the role 6 weeks, maybe.
35 minutes.
Well, yeah. So for this to be rolled out within her first 6 weeks means that it's something pre that, because it doesn't happen that
way. It's an inheritance,
I will say that. They're a charity that, you know, they have to do, it takes a while to do things. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, they can't just say, right, we're going to sell this and off they go kind of thing. So this will have been in the planning for a while. I know that there's a number of trustees who are adopted, who haven't adopted. Now, this was really one of the key parts of that thread for me, in terms of the kind of criticism of it, really, was that a safe space for adoptees does not include adoptees who have adopted, according to that thread. So I don't know, because I'm not an adopted person. So I don't know. I mean, to me, I know adopted people who've adopted. I know adopted people who haven't adopted. And to me, I kind of respect them equally, you know, regardless. But apparently that's, you know, that's an issue. But like I say, I don't, you know, I'm not adopted, so I don't know about that. So that's the other thing. But for me, I mean, like you, I think, you know, they're trying to do something. I think their name, Adoption UK, would indicate that they cover everyone relating to adoption. But up until, you know, the last kind of year, they've been focused on adoptive parents and supporting them to be able to provide for their children. So, that, like you said, noble intentions, absolutely. I don't think I would ever have worked for an organization that didn't have noble intentions. And, you know, I was there for five years. You know, myself, when I was there, tried to get some stuff off the ground for adopted teenagers and adopted young people, etc. Used to run family days and things like that, you know, where children would come along with the parents and stuff like that. And, you know, it would all be kind of supportive and stuff. But I think that they've had the feedback now and they need to leave it alone. That's my personal view. They'll be criticized for whether they're doing, criticized whether they don't.
Yeah.
Okay, let's be honest about it. But I think that the key to this is in the name, Adoption UK. I guess it was like that before I was ever there. It was renamed after PPIES, which I can't remember what PPIES stands for because it's been a long time since I've worked for them. But Adoption UK would say it out loud, you know, we cover adoption. We're adopted families, adopted people, etc. And I think that is the kind of the key part of it, really.
I think it's always been adopter centric, and I think that But I also wonder, in the sort of the vacuum of not having a CEO, whether that you just like you said, I wonder because there was a long time without a CEO. You know, it was January through to September. Was it August, September, October?
Beginning of October, I think.
Interesting. I mean, we're not here as everyone can throw stones at big organizations. And was it Teddy Roosevelt said, you know, the man in the arena and all that kind of thing, you know, you shouldn't throw stones from the stand sort of thing. So interesting. I'd just like to give you a bit of an update on my finger, if you're interested.
Not really, but go on.
So I went to physio. I've been going to physio, and the physio said, because I've got a hooked, crooked finger, and the physio said, 12 weeks after the break, you are now, and I'll quote you, you're now allowed to hurt yourself. It turned very sinister in the physio. And he said,
like a red rag to the bill.
It was. He said, right, you've got to take some paracetamol 30 minutes before you start. That's exactly. I was going, all right, where are we going with this? And then he manipulated me in ways that I've never been manipulated. And then I wept gently for a little bit. And he said, you got to do that twice a day to yourself, mate.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yeah, he said, unless you want to have a hookedy, crookedy finger, he said, but we'll get you back to normal, but you've got to hurt yourself. So there you are, that's my finger. I'm conscious of time. We've got things to do and places to be, haven't we?
We do, yes. We've got more to do.
Excellent. So, Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. And as always, I feel like we need a podcast where we can really go at it for for an hour, just you and me, and really sort it out.
Just crank out. Maybe one before Christmas would be good, wouldn't it?
Well, we do have a Christmas one.
Say again?
We do need to do a Christmas one, don't we?
We do, yeah. And what are we going to do this year? Are we going to do a King's speech this year? Or out of respect for Her Maj, are we going to leave it this year? I'm not sure.
Well, maybe we should put that to a public vote and see if the three people who listen to it are bothered.
Yeah, good idea. Once I've filled in the survey, actually, I might put that on the bottom of the survey. There's what I could do.
Oh, for idle thumbs. Anyway, on that note, on that bombshell, Bon Jovi.
Anchovy.
Well, today we're speaking to Robin Findlay from the National Union of Professional Foster Carers. So, hello, Robin. How are you?
Hi, Scott. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Reasonably where you are. It's been raining cats and dogs here today, so...
I actually posted something on Twitter earlier about this because obviously I live in Ireland and the last 2 weeks it's been like being in the movie Angela's Ashes. I don't know if you've seen that. In the Limerick lanes, and it's been chucking it down, literally soaked every time you go out. So yeah, I need to go somewhere hot.
Sounds like a good idea.
It does, doesn't it?
Robin, we got in touch with you through Sarah Anderson, who's been on the podcast a few times, and I just thought it'd be really interesting to speak to you in relation to the union and to find out a little bit about you and kind of the work that you do. And we do have quite a few foster carers who listen to the podcast, so I'm sure they'd be really interested to find out about the union. So start at the beginning. Who are you? And tell us the story of how the union sort of came to be.
Oh, okay. So my name is Robin Findlay. I've been a businessman ever since I left school, which was quite a few years back. And basically, for most of my life, I've organised conferences and events around the world. So I've travelled to lots of different countries, stood on many a stage, and helped people to promote their products or run events and that sort of thing. So basically, in 2000, I started to do immigration law as well, because we needed visas to go in and out of different countries with our different clients. And then I opened a business in Indonesia. I went in and out of there, backwards and forwards, around and around. So, to cut a long story short, basically, in 2014, I decided that enough was enough. We'd invested enough money helping other people in different countries. So now it was time to start helping people in the UK, and we thought about doing fostering. So we looked into fostering. We trained up for a few weeks to learn, you know, the different skills that were needed. And then we started to foster for a local authority. So basically people said to me, Robin, you shouldn't go into this. It's very dangerous. I said, why is that? They said, because, you know, social workers can trip you up. There's all sorts of children's health fibs. All sorts of different things can happen. It would be quite dangerous. I said, well, you know, if they think they're going to try and trip me up, they've got another thing coming, because I've been around for a long time and basically I can see the way forward in most cases, right? So 2015, I was with a foster care association connected to the local authority that I was with. And they said, Robin, there's an organization trying to make a union for foster carers. I said, well, I don't want to join that. I said, when years ago, some of the staff that were working for me wanted to make a union, and I'd couldn't work for somebody else if they wanted a union, because this unionization is not for me going on strike and all that sort of stuff. So basically, they said, well, sit the Houses of Parliament. You like a nice free day out. I said, I do, yeah. So they said, but the Houses of Parliament is in 2020, I can't remember if it was 15 or 16, I think it was 2016, it was actually the Houses of Parliament. So we went off there, and John McDonnell, who was quite close to Jeremy Corbyn, was there, and there was quite a few different people. People from the fostering network were there, and lots of foster carers. So the organisation that was arranging that was called the IWGB, the Independent Workers of Great Britain. And they were trying to do a foster carer workers union. So there was a big show of hands, and the government said they were going to support, blah, blah, blah. So then the next thing after that, there was a meeting, and they made me the chairman of the IWGB. So my job was to pull it all together, get the website running, get the treasurer in, do this, that, and everything else. But really, I'd not done my homework. And I hadn't realised that foster carers weren't classed as workers. And you can't be in a union or have union rights or have worker status if you're not a worker. So I did some digging around, and basically I decided it was time to leave the IWGB. And I had seen that there was a lot of need for a union. There was a need for an organisation that had teeth, that could actually fight back against vexatious standard of care things that suddenly pop out of the woodwork because somebody says they're going to leave one agency and go to another and things like that. Mm.
Can I just, because you've gone from, you've covered an awful lot of ground really quickly.
That's good then. I'll give you a chance now.
We can go now.
Why did you press my button? That's me.
I'm kind of intrigued, even right back to the genesis of you becoming a foster carer. And you made it sound like quite a logical, oh, we'll just do this now. But to become a foster carer is a bit more than that, isn't it? It's a commitment because you're sort of opening your home. You're welcoming a child or a young person into your life, and it's more than just like a nice idea, isn't it? More of a step.
You've really got to be committed to it. You've really got to put your heart and soul into it, because you're bringing a person into your home that's probably had some trauma or some bad experiences in the past. And whilst you're digging into the trauma, you've got to try and make sure they have a good experience and they grow going forward.
What was in your past before that gave you a desire to kind of meet that specific need? Because it's not... I know sometimes people go into fostering just kind of, oh, it's a nice idea, but actually it sounds like you had an informed understanding. Was there, you know, family life history where you'd worked? That sort of pointed you towards this?
Oh, yeah. Basically, I'm a gay male. So, and I've got a daughter of my own from a previous relationship. And so my partner and I wanted to have a child, if you like, that we could bring up and develop to be, you know, a good person going forward. And we'd had and also in my partner's family are some social workers and things, and they said, you'd be great guys as foster carers. So that was why we decided to go for it. And also, while we were abroad doing conferences and things like that, very often we take some of the money from the conference organizer and we put it into children's homes or orphanages, things like that, to help people that had not got a lot to go forward. So that was the requirement to do fostering, or the thought behind going into doing some fostering.
All right. Can I ask then, because I mean, Scott, Scott probably can ask a better question than me, but obviously it was the equality, wasn't it? I think 2007, where it became possible for same-sex couples. Was it? Come on, Scott, you get your facts right, Scott.
Well, the law changed in 2005, just officially, right. But a lot of agencies hadn't implemented it until 2006, 2007. And then some didn't implement it at all and then ended up getting taken to court, as you will recall, Al Coates.
That sounds terrible.
That sounds like you were involved in this. Yeah. And then you became friends with a gay man.
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. No, you weren't. Anyway. But yeah, it was 2005 the law changed. But of course, it takes time for these things to develop and kind of be rolled out. Yeah.
Well, so, what was your question now? As a person, I don't take no for an answer. So even if it hadn't come into place, there'd have been no reason why I wouldn't have gone ahead and tried to do it anyway.
So did you? I mean, was that an easy route for you as a same-sex couple to get approved? Was there any sort of resistance, or was it just people just took it and ran with it?
No resistance whatsoever. I'm sort of blind to resistance. You know what I mean? So if somebody wants to resist, well, they just have a bit more force put against them to do something. And that's why the union's so successful at the moment. Because, yes, we get a lot of resistance, but they can resist as much as they like. And they, you know, the local authorities and the agencies or whatever have got to give in the end.
Fair enough. I'm slightly wrong-footing me here.
I mean, I think as well, Al, I mean, I'm not speaking on Robin's behalf here, but being married to a railwayman, the unions are very strong in transport. And as we know at the minute in the UK, there's a lot of strikes going on and stuff. It's something that you're either very passionate about or you're not. So some people don't give two hoots. Yeah. Some people don't give two hoots about the fact that, you know, they're not necessarily that they're not paid enough, but certainly they wouldn't think, oh, you know, we need to vote against this or vote against that. And it's something that I never really kind of had much interest in until I met Tris. And obviously with him being on the railway, unions are very strong in the railway. Actually when, you know, now he's not in the railway and we see all these strikes going on. It's not that we don't agree with the strikes, but it's a very different kind of perception if you're not involved in that kind of area.
I mean, Robin, you said that you'd, your experience of unions prior to sort of forming a union was that you were maybe a bit resistant. Is that?
I was resistant. Yeah, yeah. I thought unions were just a nuisance. They always going on strike, and because I'm old enough to remember the '70s when the lights went out and the coal miners went on strike and all sorts of different things. Yeah, you guys are a bit younger than me, I think. So,
I am. Yes, I am. I definitely am. Yeah.
So yeah, so I wasn't. But basically, people's rights is a big wrangle for me. Having been involved in immigration law and seeing people get their rights trampled on, and all sorts of different things. You know, people that basically come here and shouldn't really be here. I'm not a supporter of if it's immigration side, but people that should be here have got a right to be here, supplying things to the economy and things here. Then they shouldn't have to jump through so many hoops to try and stay here. So for people's rights, that's one of the things I'm quite in favour of. And to have to make a union to get workers' rights for foster carers, that was the way forward.
Yeah.
So the hoop to get people sort of recognised as workers, how did you go about that?
So basically, there's a part of the government called a certification office. And the certification office basically decides if you can have a union or not. They look into the laws and rules and regulations, why you want to form a union, and that sort of thing. And then they decide if you can have one. So when I left the IWGB, I went straight to the certification officer and said, I'm going to form a union for foster carers. They said, you're not. I said, why is that? They said, because foster carers aren't workers. I said, all right, who said? They said, well, W versus Essex is a court case that was in 1998. And the judge said that foster carers aren't workers. I said, well, 1998 was a long time ago. I said, maybe things have moved on a bit since then. But if you look at the Employment Agencies Act, it tells you that people that are working on an agreement, working with the same people all the time, turning the house into an office so their employer can turn up and investigate them or whatever, they're 100% workers. So the certification officer said, well, you can apply, but we'll knock it back. I said, perfectly fine. Where do I sign? So they said, well, you're going to lose your money because you've got to pay to form a union. I said, don't you worry. I'm not going to lose my money. It'll come back in the end. So pay the money, filled the forms in, and off we went. So then they tried to knock it back, and it went round and round for a bit. And then I saw another case coming into the newspapers, which was called Pimlico Plumbers. And Pimlico Plumbers, the guy that owned Pimlico Plumbers, basically had like a call centre, and he had all self-employed plumbers that he could call out to fix your plumbing if it went wrong. So basically, the rules and regulations were you had to sign right your van with Pimlico Plumbers on it. You had to wear a uniform that said Pimlico Plumbers, and you had to be available to take all the jobs he gave you 7 days a week. Right? So there was a guy called Gary Smith, and he had a heart attack while he was working for Pimlico Plumbers. And he wanted some time off. He would ask if he'd get some sick pay. He wanted all sorts of different stuff. And he was told by his employer, no, sorry, you're self-employed. You've got to look after yourself. So the thing went off to court. And actually, Gary Smith won his case. And it went to various different places. It went to the High Court. It went to the Supreme Court. And he won all the way through. So the solicitor that dealt with Gary Smith came to me and said, Robin, I've seen that the certification offer and you were having an argument. We would like to work for you. I said, fine. I said, but don't be charging me a fortune because we haven't got a fortune yet. We haven't started the union, right? So basically, the solicitor and some barristers came on board, all pro bono, although we had to start paying expenses and things like that. And then we took the certification officer to the employment tribunal. First, we went to the lower employment tribunal. Then he went to the higher employment tribunal. They actually wheeled out the president of the employment tribunals because they realized it was quite serious. He then said that he couldn't make a decision on it. It had to go to the Supreme Court, the High Court, and then it went off to the High Court on appeal. And then we had three law lords that sat there. They went round and round in circles for a week. I think the government got a total of 11 barristers and 5 solicitors onto it to try and stop us forming the union, but we managed to get it through in the end. So that's in a nutshell how we got this far. But the government,
thinking about all the time and energy that you had to put into that task of kind of getting through all of those different hoops to get to the point where you can unionize. Do you think that that's something that should have happened earlier and maybe suffered from maybe just the workforce not being coherent, not being a cohesive body. And so what are your hopes and futures? There's lots of questions there. What are your hopes and futures for
so basically, let's write it back, right? So basically,
he's trying. Do you know what he's trying to do, Robin? He's trying to get every question into one space. So then, if he breaks up again, nobody will realise.
I think shortly he's going to have to hold up notices with the questions on.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fine, and then it's not been fine. So I apologise. I'm going to have to. It's going to be a nightmare to edit this one. But don't worry, it keeps me out.
Anyway, there are certain things. There's things like the Children's Act. There's things like the National Minimum Standards. There's all sorts of different things in place. Where if social services followed the rules and regulations, they wouldn't need a union, right? Now, the National Minimum Standards, for example, they are supposed to be the standards that everybody follows. So if a foster carer doesn't follow the minimum standards, social services are straight down the neck, they're taking them off the panel, they're giving them lots of problems. But if social services don't follow the standards, oh, well, it's a bit flexible. No, it shouldn't be like that. It should be one rule for one rule for everybody. So we're currently working with the Department for Education to tighten up those minimum standards. And I'll give you an example. In the National Minimum Standards, it says, about allegations, it is expected that allegations will be dealt with within 28 days. Right? We're going to take a word out there. We're going to take the expected out. And basically, unless there's a good reason, the allegation has to go on, then it should be dealt with within 28 days. And we're going to work in with Fostering Network. They have a thing called Mockingbird. Mockingbird is like a little family unit of foster carers where they all know each other. And so, if you're looking after a child and then the lady down the road is looking after a child, she could be auntie to the child you've got. And if you need to go to the shops or the doctors or something, she can look after that child. So if there's an allegation, then your child could go and stay with that lady for 28 days while the allegation is dealt with. So, and at the end of 28 days, the child can come back to you if you're still approved and you still want that child. Or in the meantime, social services have got time to try and find another placement for the child. So it's not knee-jerk reactions all the time. It's not quickly, we need an emergency placement for this child, we've gotten over it, for this child to stay. The difficulty with doing that is sometimes if it goes to a Section 47 and the police are involved, the police can take forever and ever. So we're trying to get the government to clamp down so the police have got to do their interviews and investigations within 14 days. And instead of the allegation going back to the local authority, it would go to a separate body called the Foster Carers Council, where ex-judges would look at it. So it'd be looked on a facts and evidence base instead of balance and probabilities. So there's a lot. You asked me a lot of questions. Now you've got a lot of answers.
Well, no, I mean, that's a really significant shift, isn't it? Because I think allegations, I can't remember the statistics, but there's a high probability as a foster carer, sooner or later, you're going to get either a standard of care or an allegation.
Yes.
To varying degrees. And many foster carers experience many, and all of them, even if they come to nothing, are really quite traumatic.
They're very traumatic. They're traumatic for the children, they're traumatic for the carer.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. And that's what we're trying to, so that's the first thing really that we're trying to do. We're trying to get these allegations sorted out. So going back to the Department for Education, they've tasked the union, if you like, with going through the current guidance and making it more tight, making it into rules rather than expectations. That's a lot of work.
You know, through my work as a social worker, and I've seen such a varied approach to allegations from local authorities, and seeing some dealing with them with absolute real efficiency, compassion, empathy, them resolved within hours. Others where it's been weeks of chasing and just no consistency. So is there a hint then that the Department for Education are willing to kind of consider a legislative change?
Yes. Before we were supposed to have a meeting with Nadeem Zahawi to see what law changes we could put through, because there's a two-pronged thing there. Basically, when we went to the High Court, the three law lords in the High Court set the rules and regulations in about a trade union by going to the Supreme Court or by going through government. So basically, at the moment, we're about 80% of the way there to getting worker status for every single foster carer. Currently, the wording of the Lawlor's judgment is that to have a union, you have to have workers. And to be, if you're a worker, you can be in a union. So what the Lawlor's decided was, if you're a foster carer and you join the union, you're classed as what they call a limb B worker, a limb like an arm and a leg, and limb B. So if people want to Google that, they can do. And a limb B worker means it's a self-employed person that works for the same person all the time, basically. Doesn't say they're going to get the minimum wage, doesn't say they're going to get pension rights, but basically what it does mean is if they're discriminated against in any way because they whistleblow or somebody doesn't like them because of the colour of their skin or the sexuality or whatever, they can go to an employment tribunal. So currently we have got, I think, 35 cases now going through the employment tribunals as a class action. And there's some with racism, there's some with ageism was a big one. A lot of social services, they want to get rid of foster carers when they get to a particular age. There's lots of different things coming out of the woodwork. Now, what we are hoping is, what didn't happen in the High Court, the government were a bit crafty. The government legal team didn't oppose the judgment, because if they would have appealed the judgment, it would have gone to the Supreme Court and we would have got workers' rights to foster carers already. So they didn't appeal it because they didn't want it to go to the Supreme Court. So now we've got a two-pronged attack going on. First of all, we're doing this class action. Hopefully, the government's going to oppose that and it's going to get into the Supreme Court. At the same time, we've got a backbencher that's going to put a bill into Parliament to try and get worker status that way. And then thirdly, when we find out if the latest lady that's the Minister for Education is going to stay in a post for any length of time, we're going to have a meeting with her and see if we can get them to put it through as a parliamentary item.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things going on.
Yeah, you used the word we a lot, and I was thinking, so obviously you're the chair. Who else are the sort of the steering group or the leadership group board of the union?
So with a union, you've got to have your main members. You've got to have your treasurer. You've got to have it's not called a chairman. It's called the general secretary. It doesn't sound very important, but that's the main man, if you like. So some people refer to me as the founder, but the official title is the general secretary. So you've got to have a proper board, like with the treasurer and everything else. And as a union, every year you've got to have a members meeting, if you like, where people vote to keep on the auditors and keep on the whoever. So come next May, I could get voted out. Who knows? But basically, that's how the thing operates. And then we're quite lucky. You mentioned Sarah Anderson earlier on. She's developed a tool for foster carers called Foster Wiki. And it's like not like WikiLeaks. It's more like the wiki that you use when you're trying to find out things online about different subjects or whatever. So Foster Wiki is for foster carers. If they wake up in the middle of the night with a pressing worry in their brain, they can go online, type in Foster Wiki, and then go to the search box, and it will give them the answers, well, most of the answers to what they're looking for. If they've got an allegation, if they've got to worry about something, it can find that. So we've got Sarah Anderson working with us as a consultant, and then we've got other foster carers that work with us doing the backup work. So for example, if we get more than three panels in a review in a day and I can't cope with them all, then we've got other people that can step in. And we were talking earlier about doing Teams and Zoom and things. Basically, nowadays, we can attend a lot of meetings in the course of a day because we do it online. So there's a team. We had a question the other day from somebody who was thinking about joining, and they wanted to know in finite terms what legal cover they got. It was like it was a car insurance. Really what we do is we give advice. We tell people the legal routes they can follow, and only when we decide that it needs to go down the proper legal route, the legal team take it on. So most times we can get rid of problems by advising, mediating, emailing, talking to social services, talking to the carer, and trying to resolve things. But what I have found is that as soon as a carer mentions to the local authority that they're a member of the union, they're taking advice or copying us in, things change. A subject, a standard of care can suddenly vanish. It's a miracle. I don't know how that can be.
Well, I mean, we couldn't possibly comment because we wouldn't want to offend any.
Ow, we wouldn't want to offend foster aid.
Well, you know, he normally ducks out of fostering conversations just to, you know, to cover his own back end. But so, and if that's the case, and I mean, you know, as I totally agree. It's funny if you mention I am a member of the how things potentially will change. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're just going to bin allegations or anything like that, but it possibly means that they're going to speed things up, make things a little less painful for everybody involved, etc.
Yes.
But being a member of that, I mean, that it costs money, obviously. I mean, you know, people have to pay to join. It's not just something that they can just, you know, join for free, is it?
That's another question that we get. So they say, well, we, with our local authority, our agency, they use, can I mention other people? Yeah, I'll mention other people. We use Foster Talk or we use Foster Network, right? Mm-hmm. So I said, yeah, they're perfectly good organisations. They're going to support you, but they haven't got the same teeth that a union's got. And they haven't got the same legal team that a union's got. So basically, they can give you plenty of advice. They can support you through allegations and things like that. But if it needs to go to court and you want us to pay for it, you need to be in the union. So yeah, and then very often we find as well with Fostering Network and Foster Talk, if they see it's a complicated case, they will ask, you know, the person that's coming, are you in the union? And if they're not in the union, then they say, well, maybe you should have a look at joining. You know, we can't force the union, but maybe you should look at joining. And some local authorities are also as well. Cheshire East was the first one. They basically wrote to all their foster carers and said, there's a union for foster carers. We can't endorse it, but if you'd like to join it, you can do. And that tells me they're transparent. They've got nothing to hide. Yeah?
Mm.
Some other organisations are telling their foster carers, if you join the union, then there might be a standard of care pops out of the woodwork or some other problems. So, yeah, that's, I mean, not that's very quite good.
That isn't very good, but that's quite an allegation from – allegation is the wrong word, but that's quite a claim that – you're making that some local authorities are genuinely sort of threatening people.
Yeah, because they're in a predicament, you see, because they can't control. If basically they want to be in a situation where they can control the foster carer. And I've had discussions with a few local authorities and they've said, you know, we feel be out of control. If they join the union, we'll be out of control. So we shouldn't be controlling them. We should all be working on the same guidelines. And at the end of the day, you're looking after children. The children should come first.
Mm.
You should be out controlling the foster carer. You know, you should be supporting the foster carer, because if you don't support the foster carer, if they have a problem and you can't support them, how are they going to support the child? So to basically try and bully, I mean, I've had a case this evening, right? It's a lady in one area in London, and she wanted support with the child that she's looking after. And she's asked and asked and asked and asked, and she got nothing. So in the end, she said, I'm going to have to give notice on this child, and I'm going to resign. So she's had 20 years unblemished, no allegations, nothing, right? They said, oh, if you resign, you know, we will have to look at your file, and there might be something pop out. She said, like what? They said, oh, we don't know. Today they've contacted her, and they've said, We've had an allegation that you have not been feeding the child that you're giving notice on properly. She said, and who's made the allegation? Oh, we can't tell you. But if you cancel your resignation and decide to stay with us, then we'll look into it and see how we get on. Now, that's just
disgraceful. That sounds remarkable. Yeah.
That's disgraceful. And that's a proper case. So if anybody wants me to pop the lady out of the woodwork, we can pop out the actual person. So... So, yeah, that's the same with the ageism thing. The ageism lady, she was a kinship carer. She'd looked after a foster child for many years. The foster child grew from a child into an adult, went off and had children of her own. Her husband died, which gave her some mental difficulties. Social services wanted to take the children from her. She said, you can take them off me as long as they go back to the lady that looked after me. So the lady that looked after her took over these children as a kinship carer. But then she fell out with her social worker about the fact that the social worker had, there was some family problems. The social worker had some problems with a family member or whatever, and they had a disagreement. So she complained about the social worker, And then all of a sudden, there was a standard of care. And they decided this lady was too old to be looking after these children. By the time the children got to be 18, she was going to be in her 70s. And it wasn't suitable. So we tried to work, we tried to mediate, and say, look, you know, why don't you let these children move to somebody locally so you can keep together as a family? You know the mother's family. You're the linchpin in the family. Let them move to a younger caring family, and you can stay on as granny or auntie or whatever, and let's all work together on it. So it was agreed that last year, last Christmas, the children would move. They'd stay sometimes with the new carer, sometimes with the lady they were with, and slowly there'd be a transition. All of a sudden, on the 7th of December, social services decided to remove the children from school and put them straight with the new foster carers, purely and simply because the social worker involved wanted to go on holiday. Because when we contacted her, her out-of-hours message said, please contact my manager, I've gone on my holidays. Now, lucky for us, we've got a tribunal case going on that one, but she went through the panel, and the local authorities panel deregistered her. Then we went to the IRM, which is the Independent Review Mechanism.
Yeah.
They listened to the lady's case. They said, this is just disgraceful. None of this should have happened. The children should still be with you. And it's now gone back to the agency decision maker. Now, that's another problem that we get, because the agency decision maker is the same one that made the decision at the first panel and was involved in the decisions to remove the children in the first place.
I mean, so the IRM... Because the IRM is the Independent Review Mechanism, which is kind of a bit nonsensical, because it has no teeth. It can just say, oh, we don't agree.
It just makes a recommendation.
No, it
makes
it
makes a recommendation to the agency decision maker. Same as a normal panel. They recommend you either stay on or you get deregistered, and then it goes to the agency decision maker, and they make the decision. But it's a little bit like, normally, if you're working in a factory, then somebody will, if there's any problem with your employment, somebody within the factory will take down both sides of the story, then they give it to somebody in management who's the decision maker, and they decide whether they're going to get rid of it. So it's a little bit similar to that. But then, if you've got a problem with that, you can go to an employment tribunal and up it a stand. But with social services at the moment, you go to the formal panel, then it goes to the recommendation, then it goes to the ABM. Then it goes to the IRM, they make a recommendation, then it goes back to the same ADN again. So it's a little bit too incestuous. You see what I mean? There's no separation.
And the power imbalance for carers is huge, isn't it? Because everyone, they're sort of set against regardless of the circumstances of individual cases, the power is very firmly set with the local authority or the independent foster care agency who hold that.
Yes.
So is sort of one of your real sort of functions is to kind of reset that power balance and offer sort of a voice to those people who don't necessarily have a big voice.
Yeah, so basically, when we figured out what name to call the union, we called it the National Union of Professional Foster Carers. Now, normally, if there's any sort of a problem, the local authorities say, we're having a meeting of professionals. So there's an allegation, there's a standard of care, there's something, and then they have a meeting of professionals. Well, the person that lives with that child 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and has to go on continuous professional development courses, and learn this, and go on training for that, they're just as much of a professional as a social worker. So they should be involved in the matter in the first place. And if there's a standard of care, they should get rid of it by talking instead of making it into some sort of an allegation and making a big scene out of it. That'd be a lot more simple.
Absolutely. But the flip side is that obviously there will be some allegations that are founded and have genuine legitimacy, and the same with standards of care issue.
If it's that case, then they should remove the child and then look into it on that way, because there are two things. Either the perpetrator can move out of the property when the child just carries on as normal, or the way we're looking at it is for the child to move out of the property on a mockingbird thing while the thing's investigated speedily.
Yeah. So can you tell me, are you able to tell me how many foster carers are part of the union?
We're hoping, if the rate keeps going at the moment, we're hoping that by the end of this year, we'll have almost 3,000. Now, 3,000 out of 86,000 is not a lot. It's a drop in the ocean. But the numbers are accumulating every day. And the more agencies and local authorities we get on board that are not frightened to tell their foster carers we exist, and the more podcasts that we do with people like you guys, and the more times we go on the BBC to talk about different problems that have occurred and whatever, then the more people are going to join. Yeah. And it's just, but basically, I think we're making waves as it is. That's the most important thing, because if we can make changes, then the union's not going to be, it's not going to be required. I mean, basically, if we go to the Supreme Court and we get all the right for all foster carers to be workers, then they can go to any union. They could go to Unison, they could go to Unite, they could go to the GMB, they could go wherever they want to, yeah? But at the moment, the only union that the court said really you could be a union member of is us.
And do you have any sort of timescales on when that decision will be made?
In the Supreme Court. Well, it's very expensive to go to the Supreme Court. And really, it's cost me quite a lot to get where we are at the moment.
Right.
Unless you're going to donate quite a lot of money, it could be 23 or 24. But in the meantime, you know, until we get to 2023 or 2024, there's other things. There's the private members bill in the Houses of Parliament. There's speaking to the minister in charge of education. Is doing different things within the Department for Education that should try and smooth things out a little bit, because if we can use the existing rules and regulations and title guidance and advice and tighten it all up and make it work properly for everybody, then that's what we need.
Yeah, I mean, changing, sort of getting a defined best practice that perhaps Ofsted would sign up to, or then that would be like a soft route to that. I guess perhaps a question to sort of start to wind it up. You're looking at the care review and the sort of there was specific recommendations in the care review about fostering. What was your thoughts, or what are the union's thoughts about some of the discussions around that?
Well, Josh McAllister's care review, I know it did push a little bit for children's homes, and some of the people that he was involving in the care review have already opened a lot more children's homes. Which isn't really the way to go forward. But if you think about all these different reviews and things that have been over the years, it's like having a meeting about a meeting, and nothing ever gets done. So things from the care review, we've got to try and push along. So, things that's been discussed by Josh McAllister in the care review, we need to try and make sure, not so much that the union follows them or whatever, but if the government say they're going to progress these things, and set up a committee to discuss them or whatever, that they do that and they actually make something happen. Because too many times there's different parliamentary groups and this, that, and the other. They also, yeah, this is terrible, something's got to be done, and nothing happens.
Yeah. So if people were interested, if foster carers want to get in touch with you or want to start joining the union, where would they go and what would they be looking for?
Oh, that's a you've asked a single prong question. But we got asked a question earlier on that I didn't answer. So the most important thing they've got to do is they've got to allocate £10 a month to the first carer and £4 a month for any other people that are looking after children. So it could be their partner, it could be their backup carer, it could be any children over 18. So everybody that wants, it's like driving a car. If you buy a car and you all want to drive it, you've got to be on the insurance. So basically, yeah, go on.
I was going to say that could potentially be quite expensive then for family. If you're a husband and wife, or you know, a couple and two adult children.
Well, a husband and wife's £14, isn't it? And really, if there's going to be an allegation, it's going to be against the husband or the wife. So it's up to them if they add other people. But having said that, to look into a standard of care costs us about £1,000. So you know, if they're paying £120 a year, it's not a big loss, really, is it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just conscious that I pay my union dues and it stings, because it's one of those things like insurance.
But how much do you pay?
That's a really good question. I'm just thinking that as I said it.
It probably bankrupts them every month. I mean, to be honest, I would be, because I remember when I was a foster carer, until something happens, you generally don't think about what might happen. So as an example with allegations, you probably think, oh, that'll never happen to me because I'm the perfect parent or I'm the perfect carer or whatever.
Yeah.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not the perfect parent or carer. It just means that something, because potentially, as an adoptive parent, between placement and adoption order, there was kind of proposed allegations, we will say, made against us, which, you know, were unfounded and untrue and all that sort of stuff. But at the time, I remember the stress of that. So until it happens to you, there's really, like, unless you're aware of unions, know how they work, know what the benefits are, there's really no need for you to be involved in them, is there?
Well, that's the problem we've got to overcome, because that's why I did an analogy of a car. So basically, you can have an unblemished driving record. You can't hit anybody, nobody crashes into you. But when you drive out your drive tomorrow, somebody might crash into the side of you. Or you might, you know, run over somebody that just suddenly runs out in front of you. So you never know. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't then insure yourself afterwards.
Yeah.
You've got to
insure. Oh, no, I mean, you can't go back, can you? You can't go back. You know, there's no retrospective kind of insurance policy that'll say, well, you know, you knocked a lamppost over and, yeah, we'll cover you for that because it's happened. So, you know, so I guess it's
and for the sake of 10 or 14 pounds a month, it's, yeah, it's good value for money. And it's just there as a protection. And also, there's the membership includes all sorts of different things. So you can get discounts on tyres, because things to do with foster care, discounts on car tyres, discounts on holidays, discounts on things like Legoland and stuff like that. There's so many discounts they can get as a member that if they use only a fraction of them, they've got their money back. So basically, it's not just laying out money and you get nothing back for it. But if they want to join, it's very simple. They go to www.nupfc, which is an abbreviation for National Union of Professional Foster Carers.com. www.nupfc.com. And then they'll see a little pop-up box that says join. If they're free of charge, they can go on there. I think they can see a picture of me. They can find out about the union. They can see, yeah, it tells you what it does and that sort of thing. And then if they want to join, they can join.
Cool. So they can visit there and find out all the benefits of joining. It's like you said, there's more benefits than just kind of those sides. So
it's not like car insurance. Basically, if you don't crash your car or get crashed into, your money's lost, isn't it? You can't car insurance. So the union has got a bit more of an advantage than that. Once they join as a member, they can get some, well, not freebies, but they can get some discounts and things out.
Yeah. Fab. Robin, thank you. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I feel like I need to go and have a hot chocolate to calm myself down now. I feel like I'm
I think
bouncing off the walls a little bit.
Three bottles of wine since we've been on this podcast, so I think it must be
quite early. Yeah, I don't think I've had any bottles of wine next to where I'm sitting, but, you know. But thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. It's been a real eye-opener. Thank you.
That's good. Hopefully I can come on again. Hopefully we're going to get some questions as feedback, and then maybe I can come on again and ask the questions and answer the feedback.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. We will let you know.
We'll point people towards your Twitter page as well. You've got a Twitter page at NUPFC, and so people can maybe get in touch with you direct through that as well and ask questions to you directly.
There's also a Facebook page. A lot of people reply back on the Facebook page. Every day we do some sort of posting, and every day we get a lot of feedback. I mean, we've had feedback today about allegations. I think we posted something a little bit earlier on today. Already we've had 101 responses to it, with some people, you know, saying just what I was saying to you about earlier on. You were a bit shocked about allegations and standards of care. People stating their own circumstances.
I mean, that's a really quick way of people getting answers to any questions. Yeah. I'm sure they can direct message you if it's confidential.
Yeah. What we try to do is when they come onto the website with a question or whatever, we try and get back to them within an hour if we can do. The phone line's open 24 hours a day. So if they wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, they want to ask a question, they can do. And then as soon as one of us wakes up, we reply to it.
Excellent. 24-hour service almost.
Fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Robin. Look after yourself and we'll speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.